racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
A big welcome back into the Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf. I'm Bob Bupka, here with my main man sliding in behind the mic as we speak, Jay Randolph Jr. You probably know him better as STL Golf Geek on Twitter. Jay, I want to start off the show seeking your help. The other day, sitting around a blackjack table, getting 22 every other hand, the conversation came up about who's going to win a major first next year. And they threw four names at me. I'm going to throw them at you, and I'm going to see what you have to say. Bryson DeChambeau, Rick Fowler, Schauffele, or Tiger Woods. Which one of those four, in your opinion, will win a major before the other three?
Tiger Woods.
Wow. You didn't hesitate on that one.
DeChambeau's going to win one. Where it's going to be, I don't know. He just got such a, you know, we talked about it during the Ryder Cup. This is a guy that, you know, goes to the beat of his own drummer, and one week it's just going to be magic and it's going to happen. Ricky, I hope, is going to get his. I've always felt like the British or the PGA was his best spot. I mean, I don't see any reason why Tiger cannot or may not win the Masters. Now, again, I may be putting a cart before the horse, but look at the way he finished off the year. If he's healthy, I would say he's probably the one. Now, I will say Xander Schauffele, Bob, impressed me in a big way. We're going to talk about him and his win in Shanghai. You know, I mean, he's up against it with Finau and Justin Rose. And, you know, he got it done. You birdie 17, 18 in the first playoff hole, and they give you the trophy. And this is a guy now that's, you know, he's won the Tour Championship. He's won a World Golf Championship. So he certainly has a chance. But if you ask me those four names, I'm going to go with Tiger.
Well, let me ask you this as somewhat of a follow-up. I'm kind of waiting every day, fully anticipating that the Tiger Woods camp is going to reach a decision. Hey, why don't we go to the Century tournament at Maui? There's only going to be about 30 players there. We have an excellent opportunity of winning back-to-back, you know, back-to-back starts in a tour event. I mean, to me, it makes all the sense in the world. Am I missing something, Jay?
Well, as you know, Bob, he loved it when he first started going over there. And then it became a situation where, you know, he decided to start his, back when we had the PGA Tour start in Hawaii before the wraparound, he decided he was going to wait and play at Torrey. And, you know, he had a lot of things going on, young kids, commitments, taking the off season off. He finished up with his tournament the second week of December out at Sherwood for such a long time. I was a little surprised. Well, I guess I shouldn't say surprised. But he didn't make the trip over to Shanghai because he played so much down the stretch. And maybe that's the reason. Maybe he is really rebooting his batteries and we're not going to see him next until his own event. But I think it'd be great, Bob. It'd be great for the game because we've lost that start of the season, if you will, like we used to have. But with him there in prime time, it'd be great for the game.
Well, what I've decided, I fully anticipate that he shows up. I think it'd be good for him to show up. I will be somewhat alarmed, Jay, if he elects not to play, and I hope I'm not reading too much into the tea leaves, but if he opts not to play, I have to have some serious doubt about his physical well-being.
Well, you know, we're going to have the goofiness come Thanksgiving weekend, and I've already had a lot of people tell me. Now, a lot of people say, no, I'm not buying it. Maybe we get to that day and more people dial it up and watch Tiger and Phil, but to me it's kind of a joke event. Then we'll have his next start, I guess, would be at his own event. I mean, is he going to wait, really, from the Tour Championship to play in a legitimate golf tournament, a PGA Tour event, until Torrey Pines? I hope not. I mean, you and I both know what it would mean to that event and how great an event it is. I hope he does it. But you're right. If we don't start seeing a little plotting of the schedule here in the next couple of weeks, especially with the goofball match coming up, I'm not sure what to think, because he finished off so strong. But as you know, really from that press conference at Belle Reve, he was already talking about being fatigued, and then came out and played great, and then went on to, you know, win the Tour Championship.
Well, the goofy event that you're talking about, and I echo that sentiment, it's not getting my $20, I can guarantee you that. I can eat a lot of chicken down at KFC for that $20. It's the match against Phil Mickelson the day after Thanksgiving out in Las Vegas. Winner take all, $9 million, blah, blah, blah.
Right. Yep.
You know, personally, I think it's, a little too late. I guess there are going to be enough hardcore, golf geeks that'll pony up that $20, but I don't know what's to gain for either player, quite frankly, from that match.
No, and Bob, I don't even think it's the $20. I mean, I think if it was $10, people would be still like, no. I mean, I think it's so contrived that it turns off a lot of people. I mean, we're both golf geeks, and we're both gigantic Tiger Woods fans. But, like you said, it's a little blasé. It's a little past the point. Hell, I'd rather see him practicing like he was getting ready for Augusta than play Phil in a match. I mean, I just think it's a mistake. It's something Tiger wouldn't have done in the past. I don't know.
Well said there, Jay. All right, let's switch gears here in the grill room. We've got to talk about the WGC HSBC champions, Shanghai, China. Xander Schauffele wins in a playoff with Tony Finau. We're going to get to Xander in just a moment. I want to talk a little bit about Tony Finau. He played well enough to get on the Ryder Cup, but just doesn't seem to close out too many deals.
You know, his only win on the PGA Tour was in Puerto Rico, and that is, if you don't know, folks, is an opposite event, opposite a World Golf Championship. So, he certainly has the pedigree in terms of the way he's played, certainly with being in contention. I thought he would get it done Sunday with a three-stroke advantage. But in the end, Schauffele made the move when he had to, and birdied 17 to tie it up. Both of them birdie 18, the par 5 on the 72nd hole. And then Finau hits a bad drive on 18, and Schauffele gets it done. So, I don't think it's – I've already started seeing some people worrying about Finau and the wins. I wouldn't get that far. I mean, if we go another season maybe without Tony with a win, you could have thrown his name into that mix of guys that maybe win a major next. I think that, I give more credit to Schauffele winning this than Finau losing it.
Well, very well said. Here's what Xander Schauffele had to say.
My team and I, we know that we're doing the right things, and it feels good to know that, and it just feels good to win again. Those two wins were pretty close in my rookie year, and I didn't really know what I was doing. Not that I had a huge clue of what I was doing today, but it's fun. It's a lot of fun. You practice, you play hard, you do everything you can to get in this position, and it honestly is a great feeling to pull it off.
Well, he put it very well, Jay, the major difference in professional golf nowadays. My team, for most of 98% of my adult life, I thought golf was an individual sport. Schauffele is talking about his team.
No, Bob, you saw it as it started to happen. I mean, your team used to be your caddy and your wife, and now it's become your agent, your accountant, your swing guru, your workout guy, your mental guy, and you still got the wife and the caddy in most cases, or somebody on the side. It's all about we and the team. And when you're making that kind of money, you can have a team.
Well, I what I'd be adding to that team would be an accountant. What the heck? I
mean, yeah.
Figure out how to make best use of that money. All right, let's talk a little bit about the event. You pretty well summed it up. Finau just couldn't seem to get it over the winner's line. Justin Rose continues to impress.
Yeah, and Justin Rose may have actually lost this golf tournament on Saturday when he went double bogey and didn't birdie the par five. It made double on the par three. He was at that point tied for the lead, and then Finau made birdie on 18 to move the lead to three. I mean, Justin still gave it his all in the final round, and it looked like for a moment if Rose makes his putt, and Finau's not able to get up and down on the 17th, and Shoffley doesn't make his, we might have had three going to 18 tied for the lead. But again, I mean, Justin Rose just continues his stellar play. He still has never he's never defended a title. In his 20 wins, he's never successfully defended the following year.
Well, good performances by Patrick Reed. Keegan Bradley seems to have resurfaced, finally getting over the ban of that anchor putting method. Keegan, one of the good guys out there, continues to play well, finished sixth. Reed finished seventh. Since it was a World Golf Championship event with a limited field, there was an opposite event. That was the Sanderson Farms Championship down in the good state of Mississippi. And I gotta think that maybe there's another new rising star on the horizon. When I hear the numbers on this guy, who, by the way, was obviously destined to be great, because right after he was born, they started calling him Champ. But that's because his name is Cameron Champ. And let's hear what the long hitting Cameron Champ had to say after that victory.
It's pretty unreal. So, yeah, I mean, just to see how I've progressed as a person with my game this last year, then just to be able to put it all together, even when, my driver wasn't really too good this week, even though the fairways were a little more narrow than most courses we play. But, just to see, other aspects of my game improving to help me win this week was awesome.
Help me out with this one, Jay. I just heard him say, his driving wasn't that good. He averaged 334 yards off the tee. But he says, by his own admission, his driving wasn't that good.
Let me tell you, his first three rounds were off the charts. He had that distance and was hitting over 75, almost 80% of the fairways. He didn't do that the same in the final round, but he was still bombing it out there. Bob, you said it earlier. Here we go again, and this is a kid that we saw first at the United States Open burst on the scene in the top 15 after 36 holes. He's got a ton of confidence. Again, one of those players that got a little taste on the Web.com tour, then gets his tour card. He's only played in 9 tour starts, but only 2 of them as a PGA Tour professional, and he won one of them. This is another player now to add into the mix, to keep an eye on, of young players that are doing it at a young age, at the age of 23, coming out. He got it done in the final round. He'd given himself a nice cushion. But, he was extremely impressive and made some big putts. Sean Foley is his coach, and we just continue this theme, Bob, of seeing guys, and it's different than when it first started, the Web.com Tour. You remember back when it first started, it was a place for guys to play in between the regular tour and the Champions Tour, who couldn't do it as much anymore. And some young guys started getting an opportunity, and more young guys, and then they made it the place to start to get your PGA Tour card. And now without a Q school, the only way to really get your PGA Tour card, other than be unbelievable on the tour and get it in limited starts, is through the Web.com Tour. And this is also where they learn to win. and gain confidence. I got to tell you, I watched, being the golf geek that I am, I watched both tournaments on Sunday and looked at two young guys under the age of 25 or 25 and under that had signature performances.
Yeah, just look at the rise up the world golf rankings. At the end of 2017, he was 1,057th in the world. Now, after this win, he's 127th in the world. Can you imagine somebody that hits the golf ball 334 yards on average off the tee in a PGA Tour event, and he's only the 127th best player in the world? something wrong with that picture.
Oh, the only thing there is opportunity. And now he's got all the opportunity because he's got – he's again, when you win this early in the wraparound season, you really have to look at it as three full years exempt, because not only he's got the rest of this year, but then he's got two more years. So we talk about how – you know, we're going to start, the season's going to get started rolling next year. It's important for these guys, for many of them, to get off to a good start, especially for a young man like this, because now he can pick and choose his schedule. He gets in majors. I mean, it's hard to really let our listeners know how big and life-changing this is. And also, it was kind of downplayed in the broadcast, and he doesn't make a big deal about it. His grandfather's an African-American, and he was part of the first tee program and got to play in that first tee event back when he was a youngster and had his grandfather caddy for him at Pebble Beach. So there's a lot of history to this kid, and he seems to have his head screwed on right. He's a player who I think everybody's going to be watching now the next couple of weeks, the rest of this year, and then into the start of next calendar year.
Well, I can tell you this right now, Mr. Randolph, I certainly will have my eyeballs on him when he gets to Maui and those 300-yard wide fairways. I mean, that's going to be Launch City. Speaking of Launch City, I was there in Dallas when Aaron Wise won that Byron Nelson. He was named Rookie of the Year. You talk about a real good guy, Jay. Aaron Wise, every bit of that and a tremendous talent, already won on the PGA Tour. There's such an influx of great young players right now, you know, coming into the game, and the combination of Tiger coming back into the game, 2019, on paper, and we have to say it that way, on paper, certainly could be one of the all-time great years in the world of golf.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. Everybody is fired up for it. There's no doubt about it. And you know, all you need to do is look at the previous Rookie of the Year winner. That was Xander Schauffele, who just won in Shanghai. Also, Bob, an event we both like, maybe not because of the golf course, but maybe the city, Las Vegas, Shriner Hospitals for Children Open is this week, and Patrick Cantlay is the defending champion, another young stud.
Yeah, I've covered a lot of events in Las Vegas, and looking back, I certainly would do things different. I would be spending a lot less time out at the golf course and more time in the city, that's for sure.
When we come back from a short break, we'll talk about what it takes to be a PGA Tour caddy. You should listen. I hear guys all the time, oh, I could be out there and be a caddy. Well, let's see. We'll find out how you do it and how you make it happen and what's a typical work week like in the caddy world. You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf. And it's heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, Audio Boom, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, or you can just ask your smart speaker Alexa to play The Grill Room Golf Show, and you'll be connected.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at The Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. The 18th hole at Normandy Well, it's as tough a par 3 as you'll find, measuring 251 yards from the back tee. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. The facility uses a unique dynamic pricing structure that golfers seem to love. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com or call 314-862-4884 and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
Welcome back to the Grill Room.
Welcome back to the Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf. Well, Bob had a chance to talk with his buddy, a little Q&A with Dwayne Bach, the longtime caddy for two-time tour winner Kevin Kister. Let's listen in.
Joining me now is Dwayne Bach, one of the more respected caddies on the PGA Tour. He's on the bag for Kevin Kisner, great player in his own right, won the 1992 North-South Amateur in Pinehurst, one of the most prestigious amateur events held each and every year. Dwayne, let's begin. Even, back when you were a player and maybe even before that, because having known your dad so well, you basically have been around golf your entire life. Your thoughts of what a caddy really was long before you became a caddy. Can you share some of those?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, growing up around the game and having the opportunity to work at a great club, the Maidstone Club on Long Island, New York, and growing up as a club caddy there, I just feel like caddies back in the day were just kind of hired help. It was somebody there to carry the equipment, to keep things clean, to help search for lost balls, to help with getting yardage and read greens. But that was pretty much it. It was being a club caddy, you were kind of walking behind your player, and you were out of all the conversations that were going on on the golf course, and pretty much just the hired help. But nowadays, if you are part of the team, it's really involved to becoming more of a coach, so to speak, and you're out there walking with your player rather than behind your player, so you're part of the action now, and it's really cool to see how that's all developed over the years.
When does your week start? What do you do in the early part of the week? And, obviously the last 4 days you're out on the golf course, but what do you do in preparation for a tournament?
Well, as I tell people, the hardest days for caddies are the early days in the week, on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. That's where we do all our prep work and getting ready for the tournament. And to be honest with you, Thursday through Sundays are the easy days, so to speak. So for me, a typical week, it depends if it's a golf course that we've been to before or if it's a new golf course. But typically a normal week will start on a Monday. I would get there sometime Monday early afternoon and then walk the golf course. No matter if we've been there or not, it's just a double check of Kevin and I. Every player is a little bit different, but I've been working for Kevin for 9 years, and we have a routine that we go through every week. And so we always work off the center of the fairway. So if it's a straightaway hole or a dogleg hole, or I know his average drive goes somewhere around 290 to 295, and I always go out and find where the mid center of the fairway is at that number. So when I'm back on the tee during the tournament, if he asks, where's the center of the fairway, I know where the center of the fairway is at either 290, 300, or 270, because that's going to change as the hole turns left or right. That center of the fairway is going to change. So I check sight lines off the tees. It takes me about 2 to 3 hours. I like to do my work alone. Some caddies work together. They'll go out and work as a team and check things as they do their coursework. I like to work alone because I spend most of my time around the greens. Kevin, not being someone that can overpower a golf course, we may have to be going in there with longer clubs, longer irons. So our targets have to be a little bit smaller and we have to play a little bit more percentage wise, meaning, you know, our misses need to be in the correct spots. We can't really attack pins. So I always go and look where the general zones of where I feel like the pins may be that week. And I find where the areas where if we're going to miss a shot or to favor certain sides, because there's sometimes if it's a back pin, there's sometimes that over the green is better than having a 30 footer from the middle of the green. You can still be aggressive, chipping it back up a hill, things like that. So I spend Monday afternoon usually doing either all 18 or just 9 holes. And then Tuesday, Kevin usually comes in on a Tuesday. We meet, he usually works out in the morning and we meet mid-morning. And we meet on the putting green. He spends a couple hours chipping and putting and working on his bunker game. And then we'll go hit some balls. And then he likes to play 9 holes on Tuesday. And then when he's done with his 9 holes, I will go back out and do the other 9 if I didn't walk the 18, full 18 the day before, and do the same thing. And then Wednesdays are our pro-am day, and pro-am days are usually long days. It's 5.5-6 hours to finish 18 holes. And Kevin being a little bit higher priority, we're usually always in the morning of the pro-ams. So we'll do that and then have some lunch, and then we'll do a light work in the afternoon, just on maybe a few things that he wants to clean up before Thursday. And then we both leave the golf course fairly early, say mid-afternoon, 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon on Wednesday, and get our rest for the rest of the week. So it's a lot of work. It's long days. On Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But once the tournament starts, it becomes easier and our days are shorter because it's an hour and a half before it's tee time. Then it's the tee time, which they play in usually about 5 hours, 4.5-5 hours. Then it's lunch and then it's a light practice and then we're done. So it's pretty much a 6-7 hour day on a tournament day, where Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays could be up to, you know, a solid 11 to 12 hour days.
Bob, so glad you had the chance to talk to your pal, Dwayne Bach. I mentioned before the start of the interview, a lot of guys, especially some of the younger guys, see these caddies out there, oh, I could do that. And they go out there and they try and they got no shot. You know, these guys are professionals, and it's not like it used to be.
I mean, you can get out there. You could also win the Powerball. So, you know, I think it's equal chance of being a caddy on the PGA Tour now with the money that is being exchanged, the same as winning a Powerball, unless you're unemployed and you got a relative that's good enough to play on tour. My personal observation, that's probably the easiest way to get on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, just ask Tim Mickelson. Next up in the Grill Room, our weekly conversation with the mouth that roars, Alex Maselli. And guess where he is this week? Well, you got to wait. We'll find out right after these messages. You're listening to the Grill Room, powered by Vertical Groove Golf, the new face of golf. Heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, Audio Boom, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, or just ask your smart speaker, Alexa. Hey, Alexa, play the Grill Room Golf Show. You'll be connected and listening.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Welcome back to the Grill Room.
Well, it took a little while to track him down this week, but we found him. His name is Alex Maselli, founder and publisher of Morning Read. Get your inside news on the world of golf, morningread.com. Today, he is in Turkey. Alex, I have to begin with, for all the people that, when I say Turkey, they think of some exotic, faraway place that they're never going to get an opportunity to visit. Give me two or three highlights of what you feel the country of Turkey has to offer.
Well, I think it really depends where you go. If you go to Istanbul, it is such a cosmopolitan city. There's so much in Istanbul. And I think you see that there's so many movies now that are actually filmed in Istanbul, at least parts of the movies are. And it's unbelievable, the history and the wandering around the streets and the food and the people. It's a really great experience there. But I come to a place called Antalya, which is right on the Mediterranean. And there's a lot of Roman influence here, a lot of the historic Roman ruins. But this area, which I'm in, there's probably 98% of all the golf courses in Turkey are in this area. So there's a stretch of the 15, 20 golf courses where, and they're all, you know, really good. So experience of coming to this part of Turkey is also really amazing. The weather's good, the food is good, the people are nice. And now, because of the strength of the dollar versus the lira, it's a huge trip for that for an American to come over here because the costs are just so much less than they were before.
Well, that's good news for anybody planning on visiting. All right, you're there to cover the Turkish Airline Open. Before we get into that and what that event is all about, how about a little Alex Maselli report on Keith Pelley, that took over head of the European Tour, has had his feet on the ground for a little while right now. From your perspective, how do you think he's doing?
Yeah, I think he's doing a good job, actually, Bob. One of the things that I think is happening now with the European Tour is that the relationship between the PGA Tour and the European Tour is a stronger relationship than it was in the past. Jay Monahan seems to be more accepting, more understanding, more willing to work together with the European Tour. And I think there's a really solid relationship there, similar to how solid the relationships are with a lot of things that Jay Monahan is doing, either with the PGA of America, or the USGA, or Augusta National. And I think the thought there is that because of the schedule changes now, where the European Tour just announced their changes to their schedule for 2019, there's a lot of events that are quality events that are going to fall outside of where they would have in the past, where they were competing with PGA Tour events. Now, they're going to be on weeks where there are PGA Tour events, you know, the Safeway Open, going to the CJ Cup or things like that. They're not as competitive. And so now when you have the Italian Open, the Spanish Open, the BMW PGA Championship in Europe, when they're competing now against those events, those European events look more interesting, not only to European players, but I think they probably would be a little more interesting to American players. And so now you can start seeing the possibilities of a world tour coming about between what's hope going on in Europe, where they have a focus of the Middle East events. Then they have a focus kind of like in the summer right around the Open Championship, where you have the Irish Open and you got the Scottish Open, then you got the British Open or the Open Championship. Then all of a sudden you have that whole schedule after the FedEx Cup, where there's some great events, including the BMW PGA. And then they have their finish, which is their Race to Dubai, which is later in the season. So now all of a sudden you have four distinct properties or sections of the schedule where you can get your European players to come back and also American players. And you can start seeing the inklings, I think, of how a world tour could come about.
You know, you use the name world tour. Greg Norman, as I recall, probably 20 years ago, maybe even more, that was his vision. Is what Greg Norman was hoping for what we're seeing possibly the genesis of now?
Well, I think Greg Norman had the idea that it would make sense to have all the great players playing together on a regular basis. But outside of that, I got to be honest with you, I don't think we really saw much more of what Greg Norman's vision was. I mean, the idea of having great players playing together always sounded great, but, you know, it was very hard to kind of come about. I mean, that was so long ago to where we are today. I think the idea or the concept, what Greg was thinking, is certainly something that I think we'll see. You know, you have to remember, we got TV deals and everything else, but the next TV deal is going to come up pretty soon. I would think by the end of 2030, at the very least, we will see some type of world tour incorporating the World Golf Championships, the majors, and obviously probably four, five, six events both sides. And but you have to get the players to buy off and sign off on that. And, you know, not every player is going to make a world tour event, a World Golf Championship event. And so yeah, I have to just see how the players react to it as well. But I think in the end, it'll make the most sense. It's certainly what will bring the best light on golf worldwide.
His name is Alex Maselli. He's the founder publisher of Morning Read. You can get your edition absolutely free, morningread.com. Couple of big names playing this week in that Turkish Airline Open, Alex.
Well, you got Justin Rose, who is defending. Jumped on a plane and flew from China to here. I was talking to Fuchs, his caddy, last night, and he goes to me, he goes, you know, my guy is clearly the best player now in the world. And I mean, I looked at him, I said, well, you really don't get to world number one unless you're playing well. There's no question about that. But I think, you know, you get Justin Rose anywhere now, it means a lot to the tournament. So he is certainly one of them. And, you know, the other end of the equation is Tommy Fleetwood, who, you know, let's be honest, 3 years ago, nobody really cared about Tommy Fleetwood or what he was doing or who he was. Now, all of a sudden, Tommy Fleetwood, not only in Europe, where he's certainly a name because they've just named him as the host of the British Masters for next year, but also in the United States, he's a name as well. So, and he has, you know, he's got a little panache about him, which I think is important. You can't be a name unless you have something, a panache about you. And I think that's the problem, Bob, to be honest with you, with Koepka. He really has no zing factor. Tommy Fleetwood's got some zing factor. Tiger obviously has a zing factor. I mean, you have to have that to be a name. And so they got those two guys. And I think after that, I have to be honest with you, the field is not as strong as you would like for the first event in the playoff series for Europe. But I think it's been a long season, and I think when you get Ryder Cup involved in that season as well, it makes it a little more difficult. But all in all, I think that whoever wins here is going to be very happy, because you're looking at a lot of money on the line, and you got a field that's maybe not as strong as it would be, and it's one of those no-cut fields.
In the States last week, in the state of Mississippi, a new winner, Cameron Champ, only his 9th event on the PGA Tour. You know anything about Cameron Champ? And if you do, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I was at the Walker Cup he played in when we were in Los Angeles. Just as an example, there's a hole, it's the 10th hole at LACC North, and there's a bunker on the right. The hole plays, I don't know, 430, 440. And there's a bunker on the right, and then there's another fairway to another hole right of that bunker. And I was standing up on the hill near the green with Gil Hans, who had redone the golf course. And there's this drive that goes past the bunker, right of the bunker, and I mean, perfect position. It had to go 330. And I looked at Gil and I said, Gil, I think you put the bunker in the wrong place. He goes, no, that's where we were supposed to put the bunker. We just never anticipated players like that, meaning Cameron Champ, flying that bunker. You know, look, length is an issue now. These guys come up thinking about hitting the ball very, very long, and he is certainly one of those players. But at the same time, Bob, what I thought when watching some of the event in Mississippi before I jumped on a plane to fly to Turkey was he's in the rough, right at 17. He hits a tremendous drive, 3-something, 330, 340, whatever it was. He's got like 60 yards left with a wedge in his hand, and he never hits the green. So for all those people that are all concerned about length, it's not just length. There's a combination of things that are involved. And I like the fact that the guy can hit it so long and everything else, but it really doesn't matter if you're going to hit it 340 yards and still can't make a birdie, and you've got to make par, and that's after missing the green, and you have to get up and down. So, you know, we'll see what happens as everything evolves, but clearly he's a talent, and I don't want to get too excited, because we seem to anoint people every week after the round or after the tournament saying, holy cow, this is the next. And I heard it on the broadcast. So this guy could be another Tiger Woods. Let's back up for a second. It's a long way. It's a lot of going on, long seasons, everything else that happens out here. So I think he's certainly on a good glide path right now. And let's find out what happens in a year or two and see if he's actually the real deal.
Well, he's gaining on Tiger Woods. He's only 79 PGA Tour victories behind Tiger Woods. Alex Mosella, he's never behind anything. Thanks for coming to us from Turkey. Enjoy your stay over there, my friend. Stay safe. Talk to you soon.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf. Of course, you can like us and follow us on Facebook and on Instagram at The Grill Room Golf Show.